probably is fine. I mean, I just like to go on a tangent on that one, but for the most part, I'd say 90%, it's probably safe. 10%, it might kill you. I'm just kidding.
Welcome to the Hormones Happen podcast, a podcast designed for individuals like you who are curious about the amazing benefits of hormone replacement therapy. I'm your host, Jeremiah, and I'm a nurse practitioner who specializes in HRT. I've seen firsthand the debilitating effects of hormone deficiency and have personally experienced the benefits of optimization. My goal is to arm you with information regarding the good, the bad, and even taboo aspects of HRT while answering your burning questions. Please join me for today's episode of the Hormones Happen podcast.
Welcome back, guys, to Hormones Happen. Today, we're going to be talking about the very popular hot topic of GLP-1 agonists, semaglutide and tirzepatide. And you're probably thinking, well, this is a hormone podcast. Why are we talking about these weight loss medications? Well, guys, surprise, surprise, these are indeed peptide hormones. And they come in a variety of forms. So semaglutide, also known as brand names Mounjaro, Ozempic, Rybelsus, and Wegovy, is a GLP-1 agonist, and it has FDA approval for diabetes, weight loss, and most recently, reducing the risk of major cardiac events. Now, tirzepatide, also known as Zepbound and Mounjaro, is a GLP-1 with a GIP agonist, and this one has FDA approval for diabetes, weight loss, and obstructive sleep apnea. Now, before we go much further talking about semaglutide and tirzepatide, I think it's important that we have a little bit of a foundation as far as what these medications do within the body. So starting with GLP-1, this stands for glucagon-like peptide 1 and is a peptide hormone, like I said earlier, that's produced by the L cells in the small intestine, the colon, and in some areas of the brain. Now, GLP-1, it does several important metabolic functions inside the body, which includes increasing insulin production, reducing glucagon release, slowing gastric emptying, reducing appetite, and promoting satiety, or the sensation of fullness. Now, some non-weight loss related benefits include improvement in heart failure symptoms and reduced risks of heart attack, stroke, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, acute pancreatitis, and alcohol use disorder symptoms. Now, once again, most of these are all related to the reduction in insulin resistance and helping prevent metabolic disease. But as you can see, GLP-1 as a hormone does a significant benefit to the human body. Now, GIP, like what's in tirzepatide, is known as gastric inhibitory polypeptide, or glucose-dependent insulinotropic polypeptide, and is secreted from the K cells in the duodenum, upper jejunum, and throughout the small intestine. It's also colloquially known as the obese hormone because higher levels are seen in clinically obese individuals. GIP has been shown to act on adipose tissue and plays an important role in lipid metabolism, in addition to enhancing fatty acid synthesis, lipoprotein lipase activity, incorporation of free fatty acids into triglycerides, and decreased gastric acid secretion, which all contributes to body weight regulation. Now, it also helps support energy storage and overall improved metabolic health. Now, GIP has also been shown to have bone protective properties, primarily inhibiting bone reabsorption, which is essentially the breakdown of bone tissue, while promoting a small increase in bone tissue formation. GLP-1 and GIP are combined in tirzepatide, which is a very effective medication for weight loss and overall health, but there are some differences between GLP-1 and GIP. For example, GLP-1 actively suppresses glucagon secretion, whereas GIP can actually sometimes increase it. And GLP-1 is considered a primary regulator of appetite suppression, whereas GIP has a lesser role and effect in appetite suppression. But GIP does have an increased fat burning effect, specifically on brown adipose tissue, by influencing the central nervous system, whereas GLP-1 doesn't. Now that we've gone through the mumbo-jumbo scientific stuff regarding these medications, let's talk about some of the more relevant clinical things about it. So let's start with, how is this given? So one thing we need to realize is these medications were developed, tested, and researched in clinically obese individuals who had type 2 diabetes. Remember, these are ultimately medications used for diabetes, found to do significant wonders with weight loss, and now we use them a lot for weight loss. But the dosing is still the same. The FDA hasn't changed the dosing protocols between diabetes and weight loss. So typically with both of these medications, you will take it once a week and you will increase it every month. So for the first month, you'll be at a low dose. The second month, you'll increase. And there are maximum doses on this. Now, does that work for everyone? No. In fact, I hardly see it work for anyone. And the issue with this type of dosing protocol is, with someone who is metabolically healthy or doesn't necessarily have insulin resistance, I guess the question is, what is our GLP-1 level? What is our GIP level? Is it low? Is it high? Is it normal? Are we just augmenting it? It's really difficult to say. You know, there may be a way to test it. I have never seen anyone test for it. But the issue comes about when you start developing what are called side effects, right? I don't like that term because it's just an effect. You have positive effects, which is weight loss. You have negative effects, which would be nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, even all the way, you've heard people probably say, gastric paralysis, thyroid cancers, pancreatitis, right? These are all some fear-mongering type issues that we'll talk about a little bit later. But for the most part, what we're really trying to do is find a dosage and a dosing frequency that's going to get you the results of what I like to call quieting food noise. Those temptations for unhealthy foods decreases. You're feeling good, but you're not nauseous. You're able to function throughout the day. You're still eating. You're still drinking water. You're still going to the gym. You have plenty of energy. You're sleeping great. So really, with the traditional once a week injections increasing every month, I've had a lot of patients come to me with absolutely traumatic stories of the nausea and the vomiting, diarrhea. And, you know, unfortunately, it's very common that you'll go to a clinic and they'll say, well, we're going to go ahead and give you an antiemetic like Zofran just because you can expect to have some nausea, or get some over-the-counter Tylenol, you can expect to have headaches. You know, the reality is, why would I take a medication that's going to make me feel like crap? I'm paying good money for this medication to make me feel better. And some people are just more sensitive to it, and that's a fact. And sometimes I've seen this firsthand. Some individuals just don't tolerate semaglutide, and they do fine with tirzepatide. It's really hard to say. Everyone's different. Everyone's metabolism is different, their body chemistry. But I don't agree with, we throw everyone into the cookie cut dosing protocol of once a week, increasing the dosage every month. What I like to do is I like to go ahead and do what's called micro dosing. And what this is basically taking this medication more frequently at smaller dosages. Now, with semaglutide, for instance, it has a half-life of 7 days. And so what that means is a half-life of a medication is the amount of time it takes for half the medication to get out of your system. Tirzepatide is roughly 5 days. So if you're taking this once a week, before your next injection, half the medication's out of your system. And oftentimes, if someone takes it on a Monday, they have more cravings for unsavory foods over the weekend as the medication starts to wear off. By doing injections twice a week, we're now overlapping the half-lives of the medication, and we're getting a better, more stable effect. But realize these are lower dosages, okay? Because at the end of the day, you know, I don't know, and we don't know what can happen when you go above these maximum dosages. Probably nothing, to be completely honest with you. But once again, it's unknown. I wouldn't advocate for someone to do that. But for a majority of my patients, I have them on very, very low doses twice a week. They've been there for very long periods of time, myself included, and they do phenomenal. It augments your life. It augments your healthy lifestyle. Now that takes me into the next segment of what do we need to do outside of just using the medication? And the most important thing that we can do is identifying areas of our life that have led us to this point. At what point did we decide I am unhappy with my current physique, my current weight, my current situation? It didn't happen overnight. This has been a slow, progressive thing. So we need to identify those, whether it be I'm not active throughout the day, I'm eating everything that comes from a can, a box, or a bag, artificial preservatives in the foods. We need to identify these. And this is a good time to start changing it. Because when you're on this medication, you're going to have much better self-control. You're just not going to have that food noise, that voice in the back of your head that says, oh, I'm craving some sugar, I'm craving some fat. And it's great. It's a huge help. But at the end of the day, we also need to say, well, what can I substitute that for? Because I still need to eat a minimum amount of calories. And I also need to do weight-bearing activities. This is absolutely paramount. A misconception a lot of people will say is, well, semaglutide and tirzepatide cause you to lose your muscle mass. And they're not wrong. But the medication isn't what's causing it. It's the sudden decrease in weight from a calorie restriction. If you did this without the medication and you just stopped eating or you drastically reduced your amount of calories for a prolonged period of time and you're losing a significant amount of weight, there will be muscle loss. Now, the issue is that when we use this medication, it cuts down the food noise. We still don't work out. We're not doing weight-bearing activity. We're not consuming protein. We're losing fat, we're losing muscle, we're ultimately losing weight, but then for some reason, whether it be financial, personal choice, we stop the medication. And now that food noise starts creeping up again. But we don't know how to make these smart, or I don't want to call it smart, I want to say alternative food selections. We're not going to the gym. Well, we gain weight back. But now we have less muscle mass to support our frame. And we've created a very unstable, a very metabolically unstable environment. And this happens more than you would think. So it's really important to hone in on what can I adapt to? What can I change in my lifestyle to help promote this long term without this medication? Now, you know, you probably could be on these medications for the rest of your life. Of course, we don't have data to support that claim. But I've been on it for a very long period of time, and I know people that have been on it for years, and they're doing fantastic. But once again, this is still the Wild West, and things change. Now, a lot of people will come to me and say, I have concerns regarding thyroid cancer, or I'm afraid that my intestines are going to become paralyzed. And so really what these come from is, as far as the thyroid cancer, when they had done studies in rats, there were rats that developed a medullary thyroid cancer. But rats just notoriously get these weird cancers. It's hard to say why. Can we really extrapolate that information from the studies in animals and say this is going to happen to humans? I don't think so. And I don't know anyone that has developed a thyroid cancer from the medication. I do know that there are some people who say that if you have a family history of thyroid cancer, you shouldn't be on these medications. But I guess the argument to that is, we already secrete this, guys. This is a hormone your body is making as I'm talking to you. So if it really had such a negative effect on us, we probably would have noticed it. But it's hard to say. Now, as far as the gastroparesis, right? This is a condition that we oftentimes see in diabetics. The intestines will stop doing what's called peristalsis, where they move basically material through the body. They kind of have this rhythmic motion. And when it stops, we call this well, diabetic gastroparesis. But gastroparesis is just when that movement stops. Things kind of get backed up and it can cause bowel obstructions and a lot of other horrible issues. But once again, I have never actually seen someone develop this issue. Now, could it theoretically happen? Sure. Is it probably related to dosage? I'm sure it plays a role, and it probably also plays a role in the population that we're doing this in. Now, you have to realize a lot of these negative outcomes were seen in studies testing the medication on metabolically unstable diabetics. So, of course, we're going to have negative effects from the underlying pathology that we're treating, but it's really easy to blame it on the medication. So once again, these are all, you know, calculated risks, things that you need to talk to your provider with. But I have really come to realize that these medications are incredibly safe. The safety profile on these medications is amazing. It's so beneficial for helping to reduce insulin resistance and metabolic disease. And especially with the microdosing, lower doses, I find it is a win-win. What really blows my mind with semaglutide and tirzepatide is the amount of people that refer to them as cheating. People will say, these medications are cheating. You're not putting in the hard work. You're not putting in the effort. You're taking a shot to do all the hard work. And I find it comical because at the end of the day, how can we be cheating at life? If there's a medication that's going to help us be healthier, to help reduce insulin resistance, metabolic dysfunction, why would we shame someone for wanting to take that? I do believe, like I had said just recently, that it's important that you build the foundations underneath it. But if there was a pill and someone said, this pill takes away all your problems in life, I would take it in a heartbeat. I would not care what other people think. As far as the cheating aspect goes, I don't agree with that whatsoever. To each their own. I think that if this is going to help you make a better positive choice on your life, to be able to live a longer life, a healthier life, spend time with your family, your children, be a better husband, wife, son, daughter, whatever it may be, if it's going to augment you personally, optimize you, it doesn't matter what other people think. So if someone has told you that these medications are cheating, and that's a reason why you've been hesitant to ever explore them, I would say screw them. I would say screw them. Do what is best for you, because at the end of the day, no one cares about you more than you. All right, so to finish off this segment, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the results that I've seen in patients and I've seen in myself with these medications. So I've got several patients on both semaglutide and tirzepatide, and I can say with full confidence that with the microdosing protocol, I have not seen any of the adverse effects that they have had in the past. I've had lots of patients come to me who had been on traditional dosing and they had gotten to the near top end of the maximum doses that we know of. And they were miserable. They were losing weight, but they were always throwing up. They were missing work. They were having to reschedule appointments because the just insane nausea and vomiting, constipation, diarrhea, headaches. And the reality is, you know, can we really be surprised when we're jumping dosage so high? You're essentially doubling it every month till you get to the maximum dosage. I wouldn't advocate that for hormone replacement therapy for like testosterone, estradiol, progesterone. I definitely wouldn't advocate it for hormone replacement therapy with, you know, GLP-1s or GIPs. When I get these patients that have been essentially traumatized from it in the past on these microdosing protocols, they feel great. They're surprised. They're surprised that such a low dose is alleviating that food noise that they still had at higher doses. It really does a huge benefit by basically overlapping those half-lives. I've had patients lose anywhere from 5 pounds to 30 pounds. Now realize a lot of these patients are already metabolically healthy and at a fairly lean weight. I don't believe you should have to be morbidly obese to be on these medications. I'm not morbidly obese, and I've been on them for about 6-7 months. I've been on both semaglutide and tirzepatide. I'm still hitting the gym as hard as I can because I'm trying to build muscle. I feel like I'm losing body fat, but I'm still gaining weight. I'm still building muscle. And a lot of that's also with the testosterone as well. But, you know, regardless, I think this is a medication that anyone can use. I think it is so beneficial because at the end of the day, we're really combating things we have no control over. Like I said, the environment that we're in is so inflammatory that we're really just trying to get back to a decent baseline here. But at the end of the day, like I said, I've seen great results from both medications, semaglutide and tirzepatide. I can tell you firsthand from being on both of them that I do feel a fat burning effect on the tirzepatide. I have seen more body composition changes on the tirzepatide as I have the semaglutide. Not to say that I won't try the semaglutide again, but I have noticed the tirzepatide for me personally has been more effective.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important announcement.
Look, guys, the harsh reality is that aging naturally is no longer possible. We're bombarded with endocrine disruptors every day without even knowing it. Seeking treatment usually leads to the prescription of unnecessary medications and unwanted reassurance that what we're experiencing is normal, but it's not. At Still City HRT and Weight Loss, we not only ask questions, but listen to answers and believe that treatment cannot be a cookie-cutter protocol. If you're curious about the amazing benefits of hormone replacement therapy or have been turned away by our traditional Western medical society, don't hesitate to call 719-669-4223 now to schedule labs and discuss treatment options.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Q&A. I try to keep these podcasts under 20 minutes, so I'm going to actually just do one question because we're running out of time. So this question comes from someone in Kansas, actually, and she asks, is it safe to be taking medication from preloaded syringes? I love this question because, to be honest with you, I get on a huge tangent about this. The answer is probably, but the more realistic answer and the one that just kind of screams in the back of my head is hell no. There's many reasons why I say it's not safe. Well, one, unless you actually see them drop the medication, do you know what you're actually getting? And I'm not necessarily saying there's going to be malintent or you're going to be getting a harmful medication, but if you're paying good money for a medication, you want to be damn sure you're getting that medication. But two, we have to realize that in that little syringe, there's a rubber stopper at the bottom. And I've seen this firsthand with some testosterone that I had drawn up and had out for a couple weeks. The medication changes color. The color of the medication in the syringe has changed in about, I think it was 2 weeks, in contact with that rubber stopper. So that lets me know that rubber stopper is probably absorbing into the medication. Now, granted, you know, semaglutide and tirzepatide, I haven't done that with those medications, but I can only imagine that, you know, microdosing ourselves with rubber is probably not a great idea. So I just say, no, I say err on the side of caution. If you're going to pay for a medication, get all the medication, get the whole vial, get the needles, draw it up yourself and inject it. That way you have no doubts in your mind. You're getting what you paid for and it's safe. But it probably is fine. I mean, I just like to go on a tangent on that one. But for the most part, I'd say 90%, it's probably safe. 10%, it might kill you. I'm just kidding.
I want to thank everyone for listening to today's episode of the Hormones Happen podcast and hope that you were able to find some value in the information that was provided today. If you have any questions that you would like to have discussed on the podcast, please send them to the email listed below or message us on the Still City HRT and Weight Loss Facebook page. Remember, you are not alone in the war on hormones. Stay optimized.